Europe on Air.
Europe on Air.
Europa por las ondas.
Europa auf Sendung.
Europe on Air.
Europe on Air. Near FM's new weekly half-hour program looking at themes including migration, education, mass media, religion, agriculture, gender, environmental policies and much more. Tune in every Thursday 4:30 to 5 p.m.
Dave, hello and welcome to Europe on Air. Over the course of this series, we're looking at aspects of Irish society in the European context. Today, we'll be considering aspects of the education system in Ireland. And my guests are Siobhan O'Connell, Principal of St Mary's Secondary School in Balldoyle, and Niamh Farran, Communication Officer at AINTIS, the Irish National Adult Learning Organisation. First off, Siobhan, to you, Principal of a local secondary school. The junior cert and the changes that are coming, that's a big topic for people. What's happening in your school? How do people feel about that?
Yes, it is a big topic, and there's a lot of talk about it, especially today after the two unions decided that we wouldn't have anything to do with the new junior cert until they look at the assessment. That's the big talking point. The junior cert will still exist until 2022, basically. It's going to take a long time for the whole thing to become embedded. The plan is that it starts with English this year, but that's in 2014. But that's the only subject that's going to be examined as part of the new junior cert in 3 years' time, and then science will come in the following year. So, I mean, people don't need to panic. The junior cert will exist for a long time to come yet. It's just every year there'll be a different couple of subjects that'll change. It's going to be called the Junior Cert Schools Award, and that's really where part of the problem is at the moment with teachers, because up to this, the State Examinations Commission organise teachers to correct the exams anonymously. So everybody has a number, as everybody who's done the intercert, the junior cert knows, and you're anonymous. So it doesn't matter who you are, where you live, how much money you have, you're all judged the same. So therefore, it's a very well recognised and worthwhile certificate. The new system says that there'll be a certain amount of school evaluation. Eventually, it will be all school evaluation. And therefore, that's where teachers are worried because, you know, we get emotionally attached to our students, number one. You know when somebody's worked really hard. You'll have to fail people. You don't want to do that. At the moment we stand back, it's all anonymous and you prepare them for it. As somebody said to me today, if you do a driving, you know, you go learn how to drive, your driving instructor, let's say, doesn't examine you and pass you or not pass you in the end. And that's what we've been asked to do. And teachers have a huge problem with that. And it's not to do with money. It's not to do with extra work. It's to do with the fairness of the system, that every school is treated exactly the same. Because we reckon it could be a two-tier system then. If a school is given an award, I mean, who's to say people in an area might say, oh, well, the award from that school is more worthwhile than the award from another school. And you're going to get that a lot. So we just feel that it's fairer to keep the assessment anonymous, third party, and no names.
Yeah, I can see where that clearly is a problem, because it would be such an interpersonal relationship between a teacher and a pupil.
Yeah.
There are obviously concerns about that, but are there advantages in introducing
in the new junior cert? Oh, yeah. I mean, everything gets stale. I think the original ones originally it was the inter when I was in school, and then it became 25 years ago, it became the junior cert, and there was a huge amount of talk about it at the time. I was a young teacher and we were all excited. Like everything, it got stale, and it's not doing now what it's supposed to do. You know, it was supposed to originally prepare people for the leaving cert. They brought in two levels. They amalgamated the group cert with the inter cert to make it the junior cert, and now students are doing so well, maybe at junior cert level, and then really amazed that they're finding fifth year difficult. So you do need a new exam, and it's a new world anyway, and new skills. And it's all about skills now.
And would it take away a little bit from the pressure of the exam on that day? Is that too much for pupils at that age? And would they be better off being assessed on an ongoing basis?
But I don't think they will be assessed on an ongoing basis. You see, that's it. They'll be learning skills. And it'll be knowledge. At the moment, it's a lot of content. There's a lot of rote learning. And then but there are no transferable skills. And that's what's probably happening further up the line as well. And They will be assessed, but they still will only be assessed on maybe a couple of pieces of work. But they'll be working together. It'll be an awful lot of collaborative work. So the new world they're going into admires presentation skills, team skills. They're not something that you learn in exams, in school exams. When you go to college, maybe, yeah, you do presentations and when you're working in teams. But you don't do that in school at the moment, so they're not properly prepared, actually.
Okay.
So, but they'll have to change the Leaving Cert to match it.
Well, I'm sure that's a bit further down the line.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe there'll be problems then going from this new Junior Cert into the Leaving Cert, because it's an old-fashioned Leaving Cert.
Maybe to move away from that for the moment, with regards to skills that pupils do gain at skills at school, and even with regard to what happens if you fail at second level school, mm-hmm. or if it fails you, if I go to Niamh, with regard to AINTIS and the Irish National Adult Learning Organisation, how good is second chance education in Ireland?
Well, I suppose, that's a very interesting question, considering what's happening at the moment. I mean, just it's interesting just to hear what Siobhan has been saying about the changes and the reforms that are happening in second level education, because, you know, there's a very significant reform agenda underway in the further education and training sector. I suppose when you ask a question like how good is second chance education, the we don't really know, because second chance education is so diverse. We use the term adult learning, but adult learning means a lot of different things. You can be talking about somebody taking an evening course at night. It could mean somebody who's taken a third level degree as an adult who has returned. It could mean somebody that's upskilling. So, and unfortunately, the level of data that we have regarding, you know, what happens to people once they finish these programs is we don't have a lot of data, because it has been the Cinderella sector within the education system for so long. Happily, that is starting to change, because obviously it has a huge role to play in terms of the current unemployment issues and in helping people to, you know, get back on their feet and hopefully get, you know, people who are unemployed, helping them find work or to transfer into other areas. So that, you know, that going forward we will be able to see how effective, what are the effective interventions that actually help people do that.
And if it's difficult to know how many people take part in adult education in Ireland, then is it also very difficult to make a comparison to other countries?
Well, we have done a small, I mean, we would count the numbers ourselves fairly regularly, and we estimate that each year there's about 300,000 adults in Ireland taking part in some form of education. Now, as I say, that could be an evening class, which is very difficult that's not formally counted, but it could be something more formal as well. I mean, a lot of adults take part in learning that's non-accredited or non-formal. So we don't have very detailed statistics on that. In terms of how we compare to other European countries, we had last year the publication of a piece of research by the OECD that was carried out across 24 countries. So that is really the first time that gives us actually very robust and very interesting insights into the level of skills of Irish adults and how they compare with other adults.
And is there a table? How did we do against the European average, or what's that look like?
Well, the study in Ireland was carried out on part of the OECD by the CSO. So they interviewed 6,000 adults across the country in three areas. So they focused on literacy, numeracy, and the third area then was the use of technology. So not just being able to access a computer, but using a computer to solve a problem or to perform a task. So what they found in relation to literacy was probably a little bit more disappointing than what we expected, in that we were placed out of the 24 countries, we were placed 17th for literacy. That was within a cohort of another. There were five other countries within that. In numeracy, so we were round about the average in terms of the OECD countries. Mm-hmm. In numeracy, we were a bit poorer than that, so we were below average. But I think probably those are generalizations, and it's probably more interesting to look at and what it tells us about our attitudes to education as a country as a whole, and what we can learn from countries like Finland, the Netherlands, Japan, Korea, countries that are actually scoring very high. I think that's probably really where the interest is, rather than looking at it in terms of it being a competition.
When it comes to these kind of comparative studies and what they tell us, maybe Siobhan, are you familiar with the PISA scoring system and what?
Yeah, which is, we were just talking about that before the show started there, that in 2006, the PISA study, which, you know, looks at literacy, numeracy, and it's science, I think, it's maths and science. It's in 34 countries or more, I think, now. I can't tell you offhand. But anyway, they did a comparison, and in 2006, we were above average in literacy and numeracy. But when it came to 2009, we'd slipped to average, and everybody panicked. And all the initiatives came in then about the numeracy and literacy and numeracy and school evaluation, and that's where the whole thing started, because terrified, because of course it has a huge impact on your economic capacity, and if your people aren't skilled in those areas, well then you're not going to attract business, etc. So huge push then in schools, where we're all looking now at literacy and improving the literacy levels, because there's no doubt about it, they have disimproved. But we were just saying that earlier. I don't think it was, my personal opinion, having talked to a couple of people, was that it really wasn't done properly in Ireland at the time. And I think perhaps the results were a little bit skewed because of that, because when it was done there recently, we went back up again. So it was a bit better. And everybody said, oh, that's wonderful, that's because of new initiatives. I personally don't think that was true. But it could have had something to do with it.
This PISA study, is that for schools or is that for all adults?
No, it's adolescents, it's young people, 15-year-olds across Europe.
15-year-olds.
And around the world, really. 78 countries,
is it? I think it's bigger than the PIAC research. Mm. So I think there's about 34 countries. But I mean, again, I think it's the detail or some of the issues that can be flat. Like, for example, in the last PISA research, I think one of the areas they identified was around female performance. Yeah. So the performance of young women in relation to mathematics, yes, and science, yeah, is quite poor,
yeah,
and that enables you, I suppose, exactly like what you're saying, then you can introduce initiatives, yeah, to try and, yeah, change that or, yeah, try and address that. So I mean, I think, yeah, these studies are useful, and particularly PISA, because it's done every 3 years, mm-hmm, so you can really benchmark things, mm-hmm, over a past number of studies, mm-hmm, whereas with PIAC, what we're looking at is I'm not sure when we're going to see another assessment of adult skills, which makes it, yeah, difficult for us to compare stuff.
And
to
talking about the maths there in the PISA study, one thing I noticed about it was that it said the girls were mathematical, mm-hmm, and they could do the honours maths, etc. You know, they were very highly intelligent, etc. But they'd no confidence. Mm-hmm. Irish girls in particular lacked confidence in maths.
Yeah, and I think confidence, but I think also, and I'm sure it's the same across in the second level education system. It comes across very strongly in adult education and further education, or with second chance learners, the role of the tutor or the role of the teacher. Like if you have a good teacher and a good tutor, that is such a kind of a defining thing, you know, that will make you stick with something and can really inspire you to finish a course.
But so can home background as well, because a lot of us came from backgrounds where, you know, you wouldn't be particularly good at maths, and let's face it, you have to really try. And they say, ah, don't worry about it, I wasn't any good at maths either, we're more of an English family, or we're better at art, or we're more creative, and so therefore gives them an out. But they wouldn't say that to them about English. Oh, well, no, we're no good at English, we're better at such and such. You know, there seemed to be a thing about maths, oh, there was something mystical about it. And so therefore it was okay to say you're no good at maths, instead of just being directly, and particularly for girls, yeah, that's the case.
So is there a job there for career guidance? Is that a role to support the girls and to say that science and maths is for you, those areas are important for you?
Oh yeah. I mean, when I was in school, and older than both of you, I mean, we didn't have honours maths. It didn't matter how brilliant you were, mm-hmm, because you were a girl, therefore you couldn't do honours maths. And you couldn't, therefore that meant you couldn't go on to engineering, you couldn't go on to medicine, because you didn't have honours maths. So I suppose
has that changed over a generation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh yeah, it's great. It's great to see the girls doing the honours maths and looking for it. And I tell you what really made a difference, the extra 25 points in the leave insert. That's made a huge change. You know, they're going looking for to do honours maths, whereas before they say, I'll be okay with the pass. That's actually inspiring them to go on. More than career guidance or anything.
Yeah. I think it's generally believed that girls are now better at school than boys. So is that an urban myth or is that true?
No, it's because the exams suit them better. The learning in a school.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of studies that have said that girls actually do better. It's the problem then is the world of, is in terms of the opportunities that girls are afforded or that females are afforded. You know, is that they don't, you know, they don't have access to the same employment opportunities despite performing so well educationally.
And is that in Ireland that girls are better at school, or is that just generally? Is that everywhere?
Well, I know. I only know in Ireland. I think it's the school system. It's the way we learn. It's the way the classes are structured. But this new junior cert, you see, was going to take away from that. It was going to be more group work, more presentations, more collaborative learning, more peer assessment. It's a whole exciting change for junior cert, and that'll probably suit the boys as well. I mean, girls are quite happy to sit. Well, not happy, but they'll sit in a class and they'll be quiet and they won't disrupt, because they don't need to be active all the time. So you know, the new methodologies might make a difference there. But definitely, girls like writing and they like talking and communicating. And that's the exam system
as it
is.
Yeah, I suppose even in terms of participation in second chance education or in further education, you'd see much stronger, you know, you'd see females much more willing to take up learning.
Yeah.
Niamh, do boys fail school or does school fail boys more often? I mean, are there more boys who leave early and go and get jobs as building and stuff, and are they more likely to need a second chance?
The latest research last year shows that we are making progress in the area of early school leaving, in that now they reckon that, I think it's about 90%. So it's just under 10% of school leaving children leave in comparison to, I think, 14% at European levels. So there are improvements, but definitely boys are more likely to leave school earlier than girls.
Yeah. And Siobhan, is that your experience?
Well, I'm in an all-girls school.
Well, with the girls, are they more likely to stay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you'd nearly have... Oh gosh, you'd nearly have 100% retention nearly in a girls' school now, you know, in our school anyway, and in local schools.
Has that partly to do with a more traditional sense of jobs and where education leads you? I mean, boys are still more likely to become builders or mechanics. Is that still true?
Well, I think things are changing a lot now, in that, you know, I mean, the world of work is changing and it's generally acknowledged, you know, you'd see, I mean, we've more people going to taking third level education, that it's now recognised that, you know, if you don't have an education, you're not going to have the same opportunities as somebody who does. So, I mean, that's an incentive, I think, in itself to stay and to finish it.
And there
maybe
is nothing for
else.
I mean, if you leave school at 16, what can you do?
Yes, yeah.
You can't do anything. There are no apprenticeships. I mean, okay, you might eventually, even if you want to do an apprenticeship, maybe when I was in school, students left school at 15 and 16. That was the norm. You left after your intercert. But they had jobs to go to. There were lots of different things you could do. You could do an apprenticeship. But then in the 80s, when we had the last recession, let's say, There were no jobs, there were no apprenticeships. So therefore students stayed on in school, because even local shops were looking for a leave insert. So students stayed on. Then it became, there were no jobs, so then they'd start to go to college, PLCs, other types of third level colleges.
And I think now when you look at initiatives like the Coder Dojo movement, you know, and I mean how that's building skills of children at a very young age in relation to technology.
What's that one again?
The Coder Dojo movement, where it's basically run by volunteers working in the technology industry who run boot camps or summer camps or weekend camps for very young children, teaching them how to code. And, you know, so children by the age of 11 or 12 who are involved in this, you know, are going to have skills that will surpass their teachers by the time they're...
Yeah,
you know, 13 or 14. And just because, you know, we know that there are going to be a lot of, that's, you know, that's where a lot of the jobs are going to come from, is the ICT sector. So
to jump back to one important part of second level schooling, and something that may stop people doing well at school, bullying, how big of an issue is that?
Well, recent statistics would say that quite a number of children say that they've been bullied in school. Sorry. It's always been, it is definitely a factor, and it takes different forms, you know, nowadays. And of course, with the cyberbullying, it's really made it difficult. There was a time when you could go home from school, you could close your door and you'd be free until the next day. Now they're never free with their mobile phones, and they're on Facebook or whatever it is they're on. And it is a problem, because obviously if something happens outside, it comes into school, and that's what we're dealing with nowadays with the new anti-bullying procedures. Whereas before we would have said, well, if it happens outside, it's nothing to do with us. Now if it impacts on what's happening in school and on their learning, or it makes things difficult for them, we have to deal with it. So it is definitely a huge factor.
And do you think, Niamh, that many people would leave school early because of that? Is that an issue that comes up?
It probably is, but I mean, I'm kind of interested in it more that I'm just thinking as you're talking there, just about how little sometimes parents actually are aware about, you know, maybe if it's social media or you know, how technology and that, how this can be going on without to your child, without you even being aware of it or understanding it.
Yeah.
And I think just, you know, it's very important that we try and kind of target and try and engage parents around these issues and to make sure that they understand.
And you see, it's very insidious as well, because somebody was telling me, one of the kids was telling me recently, that it's not what you say, it's how many likes you get. That's really the important thing. And so people look and say, how many likes did that get?
And Siobhan, do you think that you and your staff have to keep up with this, or is there a generation gap where you just don't know what Snapchat is?
Oh, well, we do know because we have to, but obviously I'm certainly not the digital age. I'm not one of those. I mean, I do understand all that. I mean, I don't have a Facebook account, so for obvious reasons. And I'm not one of these people who is interested in what anybody else is doing anyway. But I just feel that parents don't quite understand. We don't understand the technology. We don't understand that it can creep into every aspect of their lives. And also, the kids will say things, but they won't name anybody. But everybody in the group will know who they're talking about. And they say, oh, well, you have no proof that it was my daughter or whatever. But all the girls in a group or whatever will know who they're on about. And therefore, that person then is a victim. You know, so it's terrible, really. And also, I read somewhere, and in fact, somebody said it to me. If you go to somebody and you say, oh, I'm being bullied on my Facebook page, whatever, parents will automatically say, oh, right, you're coming straight off that. So not only have they been bullied, but now they've got their Facebook page taken from them or their phone taken from them, so they're twice a victim.
Yeah,
so they're reluctant to tell.
Yeah, no, I think we need to accept that the technology is here and it's understanding it.
Yeah.
Really, you know.
It's horrible, really. I mean, I remember my early days teaching, you know, being a group of students, let's say, and a note would start to get passed around. You just take the note and you just tear it up and you put it in the bin, and that was the end of it.
And
but
digitally it's
that
harder.
Now goes viral. Mm.
Assuming you can get past that and stay in education, there's a lot of studies done on the social benefits of education. Niamh, did you want to mention a recent OECD study about that?
No, it's not. It's not necessarily an OECD piece of research, because I think we've talked about a lot of OECD research. But actually, I mean, we ourselves, you know, would be strong advocates of the social benefits of learning. And just basically what we'd say is that it's not just about getting a job, even though it can help you get a job. But any of the adult learners that we have spoken to or that we have surveyed always say that they have better lives as a result.
Oh, yeah.
They're happier, they're healthier, there are definitely better health outcomes if you take part in education. You tend to have more friends. You had people do things like give up smoking. People are more engaged with their own communities. They volunteer more. So there are a number of different benefits. It's not just employment and money.
And I think one of the good things about that nowadays is too, I mean, we had a parents' committee there recently, and every single one of the women went on to do further study of some kind, because they weren't ready for it at 17, 18. So it's great when you're teaching girls, and in my case, girls, but students nowadays, well, listen, your Leaving Cert isn't the be-all and end-all. You know, maybe in 10 years' time you'll feel like doing something, and then you can go to education again and you can take up where you left off or go further. How many people have done that? I couldn't begin to tell you.
Yeah, they're a fantastic alternative.
Yeah.
Now, now to doing the Leaving Cert. I mean, it's possible to do it in other ways, which I think is really good, because not everybody is going to fit into that box.
Absolutely not. And not everybody is university material anyway, so it's ridiculous to say that the success of a school is 100% going to university, because that isn't life.
Yeah, I think that's very relevant. It comes up a bit in different places that people can end up being forced into too much education that doesn't suit them at all.
It doesn't suit everybody at all.
We're nearly out of time, but perhaps one thing that I would like to ask, if you had a magic wand and you could what policies do you think is needed in your sector of education that would make things better? Niamh?
Well, I suppose... just to kind of, I mean, echo just all the best practice examples have said, it's just that combination between giving people an early start in education and combining it with a lifelong learning, so that you have the opportunities to take up education at whatever point in your life that you want to, is the secret to.
Yeah.
And Siobhan?
I'd agree with that. I suppose that I would be very practical. If I made a magic wand, I'd have all schools with the same resources. But I'd definitely put money into preschool and early education.
Okay. Thanks very much to Siobhan O'Connell and to Niamh Farron. That's all for this week. Tune in next week, where we'll be looking at the topic of gender and sexuality. Thanks to my production team. And until next week, Slán agus beannacht.
Europe on air. Europe on air. Europa por las ondas.
Europa auf Sendung.
Europe on air.
Europe on air. Near FM's new weekly half-hour programme looking at themes including migration, education, mass media, religion, agriculture, gender, environmental policies and much more. Tune in every Thursday 4:30 to 5 p.m. Europe on Air radio campaign has been financed by the European Union. The contents of the radio shows reflect only the author's views, and the Commission is not responsible for any use that may be made of the information they contain.